We are here with Lars Chris of Lion's Share. And Lars, the new album entitled Dark Hours, the new Lion's Share album, it's a lot faster, a lot heavier, a lot more aggressive. And was this the intention when you guys were writing the songs for the record?
Yeah, it's hard to tell when you're in the middle of everything. I mean, for us, it's we just continued where we left off with Emotional Coma. We agreed on to write some more up-tempo songs, so you're right on that one, and we wanted to be a bit more direct with the vocal melodies, but actually a couple of the songs on Dark Hours were written at the same time as Emotional Coma. The Bottomless Pit is one of them, for example. But yeah, we looked at the reactions when we played live. Songs like Soul Taker went on really well, so we have like a sister song in Maple Nights, I would say, and you know, we have a great chemistry, and we just kept on writing more or less.
You know, before Emotional Coma came out, the band was on like a 6 or 7 year hiatus. And why did the band take such, I mean, why did you guys take such a large amount of time off between albums?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we released our first album in 95. We did a lot of touring in Scandinavia and Europe. We toured with Saxon 2 times, UDO, Eisters, Nevermore. We did an arena tour opening up for Man of War, Dio, and Motorhead. And we released 4 albums up to Entrance in 2001. So I was, you know, totally burnt out, and I needed a break. So that's how come the break, so to speak. And also, for the first couple of albums, I felt I wanted to incorporate all of my influences in, under one umbrella. But during the break, I decided that, you know, the Lion's Share should only be my, you know, heavy metal influences, and whatever melodic or progressive things I wanted to do, I should from now on release them as side projects. So I changed the lineup, and I would say from Emotional Coma and now with Dark Hours, we're more focused.
Mm-hmm. Lars, you hooked up with Nils Patrick Johansson, and obviously he's been in quite a number of bands. And how did you hook up with him, and why did you choose to have him in the band to be your new frontman?
Well, after Entrance, during the break, I took a year off, and then, as I said, I wanted to be more focused on the metal side for Lion's Share. So I was actually in talks with Tony Martin from Black Sabbath about doing something together, and around this time, this was back in 2003, I heard a sample on the internet of the Patrick's first release, which was Space Odyssey. So I was totally blown away, and I looked him up, and he was a fan of the band, and we decided that he should be the new singer for Lion's Share. So we started writing and demoing around 2003 and 2004, but I still needed that break, so we didn't go fishing with it until much later. And then the album came out in 2007.
Now, I noticed you guys don't have any U.S. tour dates, and I know they are heavily promoting the new album in the States. And do you have any intention to come on over here, and is there anything in the works to come over and play in the USA?
Of course, we would love to. We always felt a great response from the U.S. metal fans, and I think our music is probably more like U.S. power metal, what do you call it, like Sabotage and, you know, the older bands. We listened to Riot and Anvil, all that stuff when we grew up. More than we don't feel we're connected at all with the German power metal thing like Halloween, Gamma Ray, and all that stuff. So it's I totally understand that the U.S. Metal fans are into the band. As of right now, we don't have any offers, and obviously we need to sell more records, I guess, in the U.S. Or, you know, there must be some kind of demand, or if some band will bring us on tour. But yeah, we hope for the support from the U.S. fans, and we would love to come here today.
I noticed, Lars, that you only have 3 members listed in the band. You don't have an actual drummer listed as a permanent member, and why is that?
Yeah, we've used the same live drummer for both Emotional Coma, and now we're touring Sweden. We're doing shows in March, April, and May, and his name is Stefan Milgren.
Mm-hmm.
But we like freedom of being a three-piece. We have great chemistry, me, Patrick, and Sampo. And, you know, we don't want to mess around with that chemistry, and we like the freedom of being able to bring on 10 drummers on the next album if we want to, depending on the direction of a certain song, not feel limited by certain drummers' skills or whatever. So at this point, we have absolutely no plans to bring in a permanent drummer. We would like it this way.
Now, you're speaking of musical chemistry, and when finding new members of a band, how do you know that it's going to work out musically between you? I mean, what is it that makes that basically lets you know these guys are going to be good? They're going to be great. We're going to do well together. And
obviously, you need to feel some kind of respect, and you want things to be smooth. And you know, it shows in time. I would say you don't want to argue with people, and especially, you know, when we're working with your sixth album or whatever. So that's how we pick people, and that's how we pick, you know, the drama to play with live, because it's probably more important that we get along and, you know, everything runs smoothly than that he's the best drummer in the world, because we, for the albums, we can, you know, have a what you would want to say, a better drummer or whatever that's, you know, dead on. But live, it's not as important, and it's more important that you get along and have fun.
Tell me about your upcoming tour, and you know, how long is that tour going to be, and who are you going to be playing with?
Well, really, sad thing is that we had the perfect tour. We got the offer to open up for iStars and Saxon all through Europe, but we got the offer very late, so we didn't rehearse. We hadn't rehearsed at that point, and we didn't have the merchandise, the shirts ready, and it was still more than 2 months till the release in Europe. So unfortunately, we had to pass on it. But musically, that would have been the perfect tour, and we have also toured with both bands in the past, so we know them and get along and all that stuff. So right now, we're doing headline shows in Sweden. We might do some festivals, and then if we find the right tour for the fall, musically and economically, we'll do it, but we can't go on tour just to be on tour. It must make sense to us.
What bands influenced you the most as a musician, whether they're metal bands or whether they are not non-metal bands? What bands out there and musicians have influenced you as a guitar player, songwriter, etc., etc.?
Well, Kiss was the band that started it all for me. Without them, I wouldn't be playing guitar. But if you listen to Lionshare, we're a riff-based band. All our songs are based on you know, the great riff. So I would say Judas Priest, Black Sabbath, Megadeth, but we still like you know, catchy melody, vocal melodies. So riff-based, traditional heavy metal with, you know, catchy, great melodies. That's our influences and the way we hope we are seen as.
With the state of the economy being pretty bad around the world, have you played any shows lately, and have you noticed a drop in attendance due to people having a lack of money to possibly be able to even go see a show to begin with?
Of course it's affecting, and especially I would say the record sales even more than ever, and we can only hope that people will start buying CDs again, because it will affect of course, the budget, recording budgets, and in the end, the end result, and the production, and the, for the labels to be able to send the band on tour, giving tour support. So it's very important that people support and buy the albums instead of downloading legally. Regarding the shows, not so much. I mean, we had a great response on the album in Sweden. We ended up album of the month in the biggest metal magazine in Scandinavia, so we have some great interest so far for the shows we've done, but you know, things must change because the record industry is pretty much dying at this point.
Obviously there's illegal downloading and such, but you know, you talk about a lack of CD sales, and do you think a lot of that has to do with people buying MP3s like off of iTunes, Amazon, MP3, and stuff like that?
I really don't know. For some reason, I think that the metal fans are the ones that still buy the physical CDs because they're collectors, and you know, more than if you know the people that listen to Lady Gaga and Britney Spears, they want the singles, they want the hits, and I think they download more. So probably the strongest genre is the metal audience for actually buying CDs, I think.
Why do you think this type of music, I mean, you know what, you're a metal fan, I'm a metal fan, why do you think this type of music is still doing pretty well after all these years and has such a diehard fan base? I mean, what is it to you that keeps this music alive?
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of living, and you feel connected to other people, and, you know, I'm just glad it is this way, and even more, I think, in Europe during the 90s when the U.S. went off to grunge and hip-hop land, the traditional metal was still pretty strong over in Europe, and it never died. Yeah, you know, it's a good thing, and we're fortunate that we're a metal band and that we have this great support.
Over in Europe or in Sweden, do you hear a lot of metal bands get played on the radio? And is there a large amount of media support and coverage of this genre?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of it. And obviously, many of the bands are very big, and they fill big stadiums, and so the media can't ignore it. They tried to in the 80s and make fun of it, but they can't anymore. And also the people that grew up with this late 70s, early 80s, they are parents now, and they bring their children to the shows, and it lives on generation after generation. But I think it's healthy in Sweden, and they tried to make fun of it in the past, but they can't ignore it anymore, so it's all over the media.
No, Lars, last year I went and saw Iron Maiden, and I noticed that instead of older people, like 35, 40-year-old people there, I saw a lot of young kids, 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, a lot of high school kids. And have you noticed a younger audience at your shows?
Absolutely. And I'm very happy about that, because that's that's the future, of course, for hard rock and metal. And, I'm not sure if it's going to be as big as it was in, like, 85, but, you know, it's on its way. And that's a good thing, because that means when the young kids that are into today, when they grow up, they will play to their kids too, and we will have another, in 20 years, we will have another big bus for this kind of music.
Lars, you guys released your first album right in the middle of the grunge era, 1995, and that was a very dark time for heavy metal, and it had been declared dead by so many people. And so many people in the media. And how tough was it to release an album during this time?
It really was, but also on the other hand, that album really got the attention and stood out, and you know, many people bought it because it wasn't that, you know, many bands sounding like that around.
Mm-hmm.
So it was both good and bad, but it sold really well, and because people were really hungry for this kind of music. I remember also when we made the albums, I was like, you know, I must make an album to be able to listen to this kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty dead around our first album.
How much has the internet helped you guys out as far as popularity?
Yeah. Of course, it's hard to get paid as a musician, but promotion-wise, it's awesome, absolutely. And you don't have to spend the big budgets on videos. You know, it will to 99% be on YouTube. And people still want to see the bands perform and stuff. So I think it's a great thing. You can have your video blogs and be in contact with your fans through MySpace and the website. And everything is much easier.
Lars, what type of equipment do you use in the studio and to play live shows?
I've been having my old refrigerator rack guitar stuff since probably the end of the 80s. It's a Rivera TBR-1M and a bunch of EQs and stuff that I'm using in the studio. When I play live, I just use a Line 6 HD, I think it's called, 150, the power amp, because it has everything in it, like delays and all that stuff. So it's very easy, and you can tell when you play live that it's digital. In the studio, I'm all for tubes and the old stuff. For this album, I also re-amped some stuff with an Engel amp. Regarding guitars, they're mostly custom built. I use Floyd Rose, and that's floating, and Bill Lawrence L500 humbucker.
Mm-hmm.
And I have warm up necks in the Fender scale. So give me that, and I'm good to go.
So as far as playing is concerned, you're more of an old school tube guy then.
I'm all for tube. In the studio, you can't, you know, no digital stuff in the studio. I can hear it. There's something wrong. But for live work, it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna lie. You want to keep it simple and you know, not too many wires and equipment to bring along.
I gotcha. Well.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm all done.
Oh, okay.
I keep it simple live, more or less. In the studio, I like to play around with stuff. But.
For my final question, what is the most memorable show that you have ever played as a musician?
That was a tricky one. Hard to remember. There's been quite a few shows. I mean, the most exciting for me was... I'm a huge Dio fan. Ronnie James Dio is my favorite singer of all time, and we were chosen to open up for Dio Man or Motorhead. We played only arenas for almost a month, and that was, you know, something I will never be able to top. I grew up with all these bands, and you know, in my childhood room playing the records, I could never dream of I would be sharing the stage with them. So that's the thing that I will always remember when I end up doing this. But regarding crazy stuff, I don't know. We got invited again by Manowar, actually, because they were huge in Germany, and in 2007, I think it was, they started their own big festival called Magic Circle Festival, and we got invited, and that stage was the biggest I ever seen. By the time we played, it was probably 10,000-15,000 there. Manowar played was probably twice that. But we were real stressed. We had no time for sound check. We jumped up on that huge stage and we saw all these cameras. That was crazy because they were shooting a DVD. So we have two songs on their Magic Circle Volume 1 DVD. But that was kind of crazy because we were so stressed out. And then everything was shot on video too.